It is dense. And his point seems to waver, which is fine, but, you know, it's like where...
I mean...
His emphasis starts to shift from, you know, one other kind of thing that he's talking about to some other kind of thing that he's talking about. But that I found something that spoke so eloquently to what we were talking about on Tuesday.
Right.
Was really fun.
Sure. It's enteric. That surely is not a word he uses, though.
Yes.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, I think so. Because the biology is, you could say, well established.
I mean, enteric. You know, it's a word like cardiac or something. You know what I mean?
It's a medical term.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, medical physiology term, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the enteric nervous system.
Yeah, it's like, I think of the intestines, right? And
that's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It seems like an odd location.
For what? Based on what?
For, I don't know.
Dear God,
I think
that you chose an odd location for enteric proprioception. Why don't you rethink that on the next iteration?
Move up to the finest.
Well, one of the points that he's making is that the discursive mind is actually secondary to the enteric mind. And yet the, our tendency, at least in so-called contemporary, whatever contemporary society is, and who knows what that means, or maybe the shift from the hunting and gathering consciousness to the farming and refrigeration, right, consciousness, or the pagan deity shamanistic consciousness making way for the, right, whatever period of history we would refer to as being influenced by, right, Greek or other forms of, thought or didactic discovery. Because the Asian mind is, very different than, right?
Yeah.
Than the European mind, and different, of course, from the African mind or the Slavic, right? I mean, the Norwegians don't really consider themselves Europeans.
Yeah, I don't know if I could really tell the difference myself, though.
Yeah.
Of their perspective.
Well, yeah, if you spend enough time, around the rhythm of their culture and family and food and entertainment, notice, how different the French and the Germans and the Italians.
Wow. Geez,
all right. I mean,
cultures are just so wild.
Yeah. Definitely. There's pizza in the oven. I'm not sure if it's done yet, but it's on its way.
Honestly.
On its way. So the, what would you call it? The unfolding of cultural consciousness and the role that the didactic mind and the role that the enteric mind play in that unfoldment is a very curious, right, anthropological and sociological study.
Well, maybe I would understand if I read the article, but the enteric, would you actually refer to it as the enteric mind?
Yes, I would, but I'm a little, you know.
Is it?
I'm a little bit, I take poetic license with everything I find, right?
Ridiculous.
But it's not like the same kind of consciousness as the didactic mind, where you can almost, you can feel you're shifting from idea to idea. You know what I mean? Where I don't feel, but you can see it. I mean, you
well,
you're
yes,
a little bouncing ball.
I imagine you're referring to the facility with which the didactic mind can trace
process,
trace itself. Right.
The thought process and the gate where you symbolize it.
Well, likewise, as one cultivates refined awareness of the enteric mind, don't be surprised to find the same capacity maturing there. It's only by virtue of our lack of familiarity or awareness or acknowledgement of the enteric mind that we tend toward favoring the discursive mind, and then treat things that are common to the enteric mind as unusual, paranormal, spiritual, superstitious, because of a lack of familiarity, a lack of, comfort with the, call it not just the physical proprioception, but the etheric proprioception that the enteric mind is based on.
This is a human trait, or would you say no need to humanize it, to put it in human terms?
Well,
I mean, when I think of the didactic aspect of mind,
yes,
to me that's pretty human, not to say that dogs aren't, you know, kind of thinking in some
direction. Right. Yes, but you see, again, our bias is humanocentric. I mean, if one spends all of one's time or life in the discursive mind and has no composition,
Could that be when the pizza's done? Should I check on it?
It could mean that the oven's up to, you know, target temp. So
the pizza's already
there? That's what it is.
Pizza's in there, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is a challenge with respect to language. Call it consciousness, call it, you know, whatever enlightenment might or might not be. The inertia of our experience and the way that we frame experience and the vocabulary and the symbols that we use to rely upon the framing of that experience are arbitrary. Though they may be in wide use, you know, the genesis, origin, etymology of, right, symbolic language is anybody's guess. Because in the historical record, in the anthropological, archaeological record, it's really difficult to find the genesis of thought, symbol, and spoken word, right, arising in the, right, out of, let's just refer to it, no offense intended, the Neanderthal way of being, the Neanderthal way of being. And I'm not, and maybe they were full of language. I don't know the, you know, the science so well. So, we become masters of presumptuous bullshit from inception, Because by now, the species has already, is so self-indoctrinated into language, symbols, math, money, politics, entertainment, right? We're already, we're in the Colosseum of contemporary society. So it's already very challenging for anyone in any discipline to, I mean, really think outside the box. And that, you know, appears to be available occasionally within the realm of, you know, call it so-called spiritual discovery. And that's why it might be useful for folks that are somehow interested in alchemy and Gnosticism, would be well served to discover the presence, cultivation, and the vocabulary of the enteric mind.
So the enteric mind, I would presume that it's been brought up many times before, but not using that terminology. In other words, do you think the enteric mind is somehow better symbol, better reference point, better linguistic tool to gather? Maybe a little. Maybe it throws a different perspective on what maybe some would have certain religious terminology in they use or something.
Not just a better tool, but just for conversation's sake, the only tool. Because discursive mind is not designed, wired, or capable of revelatory dissolution. Because it only thrives on reference and comparison. And what's true at the expense of not being true. Discursive mind is really, you could say, dwells or thrives in us in its own referential bubble. We take the capacity of discursive mind and the stories told by discursive mind as the arbiter of reality. That's why we're going extinct. If the whatever the species is, in some other, you know, scenario of sustainable, thriving survivability, were to embrace the enteric mind, then by virtue of that, you're saying metaphorically that a different quality, a different texture, a different demonstration of intelligence would be forthcoming and would usurp over-reliance on the discursive mind, the mind of shame, blame, exploitation, and extinction.
Division.
And division and conflict and you name it, you know. So, but that kind of, let's say, philosophical point, you know, we're already friendly to that. Whatever enlightenment might be, it could turn out to be really way fucking cooler than how I typically operate as a dumb fuck, prideful, angry muggle. Defended, proud, accusatory, well defended. You know, the muggle malaise. Basic, your BMM, your basic Mongol malaise. Yeah. So, you know, when you look at, if one looks at, you know, a body of teachings, whether Asian or Western or occult or, you know, high altitude Tibetan or wherever, you could say, at least in contemporary examples of realization or, you know, non-dual discourse, way, way too much of it, all of it, dare I say, is overly reliant on convincing the discursive mind of one thing or another. Like Byron Katie and Adya Shanti, and the list goes on and on, where there's an over-reliance on trying to convince the discursive mind and the emotional turbulence that everyone experiences of something, with no mention at all of the enteric mind.
Well, the interesting thing is, it's as if they are paving the way for, and we'll call it the enteric mind, whatever it is. They're paving the way, but they're paving the road in discursive contact, you know?
Well, I would
and
say...
So it doesn't really go there.
They're not doing a good job paving.
Well, the enteric mind is before. You can't pave a way to it.
That's right. It's prior. Well, it's prior.
Right. Yeah. So I hear you on that. But, you know, my impression...
Another strange point.
Yeah, you can pave it really well.
They're trying to throw...
Yeah.
Things at you that you realize that you don't need to rely on that, but it's self-defeating just because, you know, the whole thing is
you can see the typical orientation of the suffering seeker, whatever discipline they may have found themselves in, has to do with their family of origin insults and wounds and what's right and wrong with society and their body and their self-image and their esteem and all of this mishigas, which is all the only thrives within the orientation of the discursive mind and the somatic associations with self, with, you know, being on the receiving end of a million injuries. I mean,
what's great about the internet and YouTube and shit is that it just throws all that shit out there so much. Like, it's just, dude, everyone's fucking batshit crazy.
Everyone is batshit crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Different ideas.
Definitely.
You know,
like a saturation point. It's very evident anymore. It's like, okay, I'm not. It's just too much content.
I mean, you know, you can, we're so accustomed to it, we don't look at the genesis and the strategizing behind who controls the narrative. What is the narrative? Like, I drive to work and I drive home. I go to the movies in a restaurant. I pay my taxes, you know, if I feel like it. Right? And so I live within a very local zone. I'm not a world traveler, right? I'm not published. I'm nothing, like most people are, nothing. And they mean whatever they mean to their spouse, their children, their boss, right? Their neighbors. It's incredibly local. So how do we break out of this, you know, kind of isolating locality, which is really the structure of our lives? Well, we go to entertainment vehicles. Whether it's the news, whether it's, you know, media of some kind, whether it's the sports arena or the music arena, right? We get out and mix it up. And so we feel like maybe we're a part of a greater tribe, a greater enterprise. You know, MAGA, right? Make America Great Again. Or whatever we're up to. But who controls the narrative? Who's controlling the news? Who's controlling what stories are written and how they're told and what the truth is? Like Standing Rock, you know, is a kind of a recent great example of indigenous peoples and other sympathetic persons coming to protect water from the egregious exploitation of major oil, right, incursion on native property to the tune of ruining ancient potable water sources to pump fucking tar sands oil. So our insatiability, right, for energy and combustion and the exploitation that accompanies that by corporations and government and the police forces, whether they're privately, right, paid, which they were at Standing Rock,
or elsewhere, and we're like, nobody knows what happened there. Even if you were there, you might not know what happened there. So in one way, we're incredibly insular and vulnerable to whoever has a megaphone, to whoever can, you know, write the story, whoever controls the broadcast. And in this way, you know, without even exotic or nefarious forms of mind control, you know, like you go ahead and read Catcher in the Rye and then you shoot John Lennon, you know, shit like that. Even without bizarre stuff like that, the fundamental mind control of who it is that controls the narrative that gives us access to some picture of what's happening in the world at large is incredibly insular, misleading, untrue, and sets the stage for, well, perhaps too many high school shootings. But again, that's just all, you know, the entertainment vehicle of looking at the collapse of contemporary society. And then, but where does your mind go? I mean, like if you want to be enlightened, let's say you're crazy enough to want to be enlightened, and that's cool. Why do you want to be enlightened, whatever that might mean? To benefit the earth, to benefit the cosmos, to benefit, you know, the defenseless animals, so that you can be rid of, you know, suffering and discover, you know, a miraculous invulnerability? Why anything? Nirsagadatta waves his hands eloquently, and says, I am that. And it's like, okay, dude, you're that. You know, you're odd, fantastic, you're that. And then he lets his students know, master, if they say that, why should we, you know, seek enlightenment or engage in any of this? And he said, well, because basically he's saying very simply, because the discursive mind is full of pain and sorrow. Buddha had mentioned that, you know, some ways back. And the enteric mind, the metaphor we're playing around with for awakened consciousness, releases you from the horror of yourself. So therefore, anyone studying comparative religion and not going that deeply would say, simple, let's get enlightened. The logic is in your face. Any human being today, you know, past 12 years old, let's say, that is not interested in being enlightened, is an idiot. Hands down. BMM. Your basic muggle malaise. To the grave.
Some people are quite proud of their muggle malaise.
Well, that perhaps makes it worse. If you're an adult in today's world, with all of the resources available, someone's got to check the pizza, otherwise it's going to go on fire. In today's world, with all the resources that are available, if you want to do anything else but get enlightened, you're fucked up.
Of course, that's most people. I mean,
oops. Yeah. If you're interested in doing anything in your spare time, of course, you know, you have to bathe and, right, go shopping and work and stuff. But if you're interested in doing anything in your spare time other than being enlightened or discovering what it might mean or how to cultivate it or understand the ramifications and implications of it, you are wasting your fucking time. And that happens to be most all of us. So, boy, you're not going to be very popular spouting that shit off. And even amongst the seekers that claim to be, you know, interested in the craft.
Now, what are they really?
It's all about amelioration of, you know, my personal codependent sorrow. And there's so much codependent sorrow that Byron Katie can become a millionaire exploiting it. Not just her. That's how much codependent sorrow there is. Just waiting, just ripe for exploitation and the exchange of cash. But that has nothing to do, arguably,
with realization, with the cultivation of enteric mind, and release from the banality of self. Where's my soapbox when I need it?
You need a portable one.
Portable soapbox, I know. For the bank and the grocery store. Hey, everybody. Just grab the microphone from the customer service desk. Does anyone in this supermarket want to get enlightened? Meet me at the Oreos. So the if there were a point, don't ask me what it is. If one is involved in the craft of yoga, and not just for beauty purposes, though that's fine too, then one would be well served to consider the presence and the cultivation of enteric mind to discover what nonspecific proprioception is and what it feels like and the quality of intelligence that will naturally stream forth, bubble up from that encounter. Otherwise, you know that we are confined to pride. And that is also part of the nature of who controls the narrative and what you're allowed to become as a tax-paying, contributing member of the species at large. What are you allowed to become? Employed? Employer? What are you allowed to become?
Number of roles.
Jeez, I'll pass. Oh, thanks. Yeah. And it's so, you could say it's so despairingly limited what it is that we're allowed to become. Thank you very much.
With one well done piece of pizza.
I know. There's little cheese pieces in there that are really crispy. They're
kind of
good if you
pizza.
Give them probably before they cool and turn to like rock.
Yeah. That's us. Did you shut the oven off? Did you see the button?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, this is really crispy.
I'm going to get some water.
Hey, you better get some water. Some toothpaste.
Burn in the mouth.
So where were we? Yes.
Burnt pizza.
What? Stay with the burnt pizza. It'll take you all the way. And it should. What the society, what the culture, what the community, what the family, what the church, what the educational system, what the political and financial system permit you to be is so despairingly low bandwidth.
So stupid.
And so stupid.
Oh, God.
That no wonder there's an epidemic of depression.
Yeah.
Between the, growing addictive reliance on portable digital devices and the fake news rampant in, every corner of the narrative, integrity of the sacred human experiment, the sacred human expression, is completely compromised.
What do you suppose is working itself out?
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Some kind of outgassing, as you say sometimes. Who knows? I mean, why would anything want to go averse? Why would anything want to go counter or go, I don't know, oppositional to? I mean, I'm asking that question and I'm, you know, involved in various oppositions.
Well, sure. Yeah.
You have to have the opposite to have opposition. That's what's really funny. There is no up if there is no down.
That's right.
So you like the up and you keep the down because there is no one with the other.
That's right. I guess we'd be flatlining if there was no charge in.
Well, you are flatlining. You just like the up and down, or at least the up or the down, one of the...
Well, again, you know, imagining an outcome of one way, of one or one form of outcome or another based on one hypothetical scenario or another is merely just the play toy of the discursive mind.
And just moving pieces around the board.
Yeah, you're just setting up your own equation so that you can solve it to your satisfaction.
Yes, yeah, so what's the payoff? I mean, why would it even bother to... Why would the impulse even bother to go there? That's a... I don't know. Question that may not be an answerable.
Well, hell, you know, here's a prana field.
I like that.
Right, here's a prana field imbued with what appears to be interactivity, sensual interactivity, mental interactivity, emotional interactivity, locomotion, construction, right, architecture, ideas. I mean, it's, you know, it's a candy store of let me at it. Not that that's the answer, but, you know, I don't know, and I don't have an answer to anything, thankfully. But if you look in your own, let's say, mitochondrial urgency, right? Without any effort, there's hunger for breath, right? And hunger for touch, hunger for information, hunger for food. Incredible hungers that have nothing to do with you. And, you know, that's, you could say, part of the majesty of, you know, of life. Expressed phenomenon.
And then strategizing pops in there somewhere.
Well, sure. So whatever the capacities are of, you know, in, quote, human form, that suggests neocortex, right, discursive orientation, well, it jumps on the bandwagon of this, call it biological urgency, and makes merry. It makes merry according to its, you know, according to its nature. And its nature happens to include the imagination of time and strategizing and hypotheticals and complex symbology as a URL system for toward actual experience. And so it can easily self-seduce into its own bubble realm of presumed implication without having any, you know, intimacy with what could otherwise be referred to as reality. We live in hysterical self-reference. You know, check, that was easy. And then we go to, you know, whatever expert is hot that day. Maybe it's Jordan Peterson, you know, maybe it's Byron Katie, maybe it's old videos of Nirsagadatta, maybe it's Tony Robbins.
Maybe it's a psychotherapist if you're really... You
could know, be a psychotherapist or Scott Pruitt. And so we go to those experts or my local, you know, priest if he hasn't abused me. You know, so we go to all of these institutions and all of these shadowy, murky places where we do our, you know, spiritualisms. We pour milk over the lingam.
Ritualistic worship.
Right? We pour milk over the lingam and we confess to the, you know, pedophile priest And I'm just, you know, don't even get me started. Right? And so all of these, you could say, dark magic rituals of whatever culture keep us apparently, you know, gleefully engaged.
There has to be a dark ritual. Like,
to no end.
You get is say a certain number of Hail Marys. That's what you get after you go to confession.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
Different numbers, and then everyone sits there and recites.
Well, it's the same.
A certain number of times.
The TM people sold, I don't know, maybe 30 million mantras and convinced everyone that theirs was unique. I mean, that's the same thing like Muktananda, you know, selling a coconut. You bring the coconut to the feet of the guru, then they recycle it and put it back on the sales table. Then you sell it again, you bring it to the feet of the guru, and they recycle it, and the next guy comes in and buys the same fucking coconut. So they made $10,000 in a good night with one coconut. Because we want to go to the guru with something.
10,000 times blessed.
10,000 times blessed. I'd like to get my hands on that coconut and put it right up my ass. Someone asks Osho a question about whatever, and then he talks real slow in a hypnotic, you know, glaze with his, like, Superman Krypton outfits on, probably sucking nitrous oxide, you know, before he hit the stage. And he starts giving answers as if he knows anything about anything. And he's just making shit up. And everyone is like, oh, the master spoke. You know, now we know the answer to whatever we asked. And where does that end up? Salmonella poisoning, you know, attempted homicide in jail.
Well, in that article, when I left it off, it was just starting to talk about the basically, you know, the spiritual, so-called spiritual communications through, you know, spirits and channels and stuff like that. He at least mentioned that in the past.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't sure where he was going with it. But it seems to me that possibly framing this enteric mind, if we're going to use that term, into sort of a contextual thing, you know, a reference field. And so it fits kind of false, you know. I mean, it gets arbitrary and...
That, yes, because the discursive mind, once again, which is its nature, upstages anything that appears in experience. And then makes claims about it. And therefore the challenge, even for the simple mindfulness practitioner, let alone the, you know, long-term aspirant for realization, the challenge is that the reflex is for the discursive mind to make sense of everything, to make sense of anything, when it has no business at all doing that. Whereas the enteric intelligence does not rely on sense making.
Then it may not need a body.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, that's right, because it's not invested in what we're invested in, right? We're the ones invested in that.
The mitochondrial cell looks like a microchannel environment where valence is different on either side of the membrane that runs through the center of it, and like a fuel cell and in a hybrid way like an internal combustion engine, because it's an exothermic reaction.
It combines things and separates things.
It's a spark.
It's a spark plug. Like a fuel cell puts out, right, direct current, not alternating current. Yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same. Mitochondria is a fuel cell. But what's it burning?
Glucose.
Glucose.
3.
And how much hydrogen is there in glucose? So when you look at the chemistry of the root sparking engine of the cell, it's a hybrid fuel cell internal combustion engine. That's not human. So here we are. We're not just symbiotic at some level, we're symbiotic at a cellular level.
That's cool.
Way cool. Now, and whatever that spark is, who knows? I mean, you look at the spark of, let's say, respiration, right? What the diaphragm does and what the lungs do to trigger, hey, give me more invisible gas. And, you know, what the capillary system and venous system are doing and what the heart's doing to move, right, fuel, food, intelligence, waste disposal, oxygen throughout the entire system, interstitially and through capillary networks, because every cell's got to have its, right, every cell needs its milkshake. And a place to poo. As one might explore proprioceptive sensitivity / the enteric mind, well, now you're operating perhaps in a more auric or etheric sensitivity than you are in a purely biologic or purely physical sensitivity.
Well, that's why the enteric is kind of throws me a little bit, you know. I mean, it's interesting in that it sort of takes away the whole, you know, mental thing.
Yes, essentially, yes.
But it seems like enteric, you know.
Well, again, that's a, you know, biological term,
yeah.
Right? Used to describe the companion neuronal matrix of the gut.
Yeah. Why is the gut? Why does the gut come to be like, you know, I feel in my gut? You know, I mean,
because of that. Because of the proprioceptive capacity of the enteric nervous system. Otherwise, not. You don't feel your brain with any sensitivity, but your gut, tons.
That's right. The brain doesn't have those neurons that feel, right?
Well, not just pain, but, you know.
It interprets. It's an interpreter. It's
strange.
What? It's like etheric poop. It's like
etheric poop.
It's like if this, you know, thought is like in your intestines and then it squeezes out this shiny little turd called you.
Well, I was wondering if glucose is
but it's just
food,
natural off-gassing.
ATP the poop? ATP.
It's all poop.
And what if the mitochondria, though discernible as an organelle, turns out to be just a wormhole for nonspecific quantum entangled intelligence that seeds the universe anywhere it can get a foothold without having to be limited, this is stranger still, to an asteroid, right, to physical propagation. We think in terms of physical propagation by virtue of our own reproductive bias. But the universe is pretty fucked up. It's pretty strange. You know, whatever we think we know is less than a fraction of what maybe there is to know. And the means by which we know is all didactic biased. Because we don't have enteric or have lost enteric wisdom. So what if the fucking mitochondria is just, you know, a portal for quantum entangled sentient impulse that does not need to travel on an asteroid to propagate through solar systems. Woo!
Maybe Douglas Adams had it wrong when he said the mice were the superior beings. Maybe it's the mitochondria.
Maybe it's the mitochondria.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, it wasn't so small.
Part of the, you know, at least in my thirst for enlightenment conversations and things of that ilk, you know, after a while it's like, ho fucking hum. Because the bias of the aspirant is so drilled down into discursive orientation and somatic orientation and woundology and all the fucking shit that happened in my life as both the victim and the perpetrator. And we think that, you know, Nirsagadatta's I am that will somehow be the release point for my greed and my sorrow, my entitlement, and my rage. And you're like, can't we just move on? How do you move on? Well, you're going to have to get a little crazy. You're going to have to get a little bold. You're going to have to get a little imaginative. You have to see the wisdom that, yeah, mitochondria is just a fucking wormhole portal of quantum entangled sentience that does not need an asteroid to propagate the cosmos. As a small example, unless you're willing to be really weird and creatively, poetically, boldly, outrageously stand outside of conformist reality and what it permits you to be, you're just going to be a product of it. You'll remain a product of it. You won't give yourself permission to say and feel and discover shit that's really fucking weird. Because it's all about, well, my body and my sorrow and my misgivings and my entitlement. And Byron Katie's going to help me, and Adyashanti's going to help me, and Eckhart Tolle's going to help me, and Jim Carrey's going to help me. And they're going to help me with what? You're still going to be a miserable idiot. And welcome to it. If you bail out of one's reliance on didactic presumption and didactic accusation, what the fuck is this? Really? Really? Oh, really? Really? Something happened to you before now? No, it did not. No, it fucking didn't. This is arrival.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
This is it. This is arrival. This is absolutely the presentation of trans-sentient, trans-temporal communion. You see, if you want to be enlightened, then, you know, you still want to be satisfied in some way as the human that you take yourself to be. You see? You want to be invulnerable or happy or be of use to others by virtue of being a healer or a teacher of some fucking thing. You want to make a living. Maybe you want to be acknowledged and adored. Good luck. You haven't budged. You haven't moved outside the realm of who it is that's controlling the narrative. You want to get out of the narrative. The one that you've been taught, that's been imposed upon you, the one that exploits you, and only gives you a really small window of what you're allowed and permitted to be happy or successful or useful or spiritual or wise.
Well, we're always limiting ourselves. I mean, you know, by choices that we make or what we think are the choices or, you know, going with whatever flow there is rather than, but it's more like the didactic flow, you know, going with the idea structure, the structure of ideas that are that we run into.
You know, yes.
And the common, everyday, you know, this or that, okay, that, you know, but it's not,
is busting out all over.
You know, it's just the same old, same old. I mean, you know, it's a choice between.
Well, hang on. Hang on. You don't know, nor do I know what it is. No one does. That doesn't stop you from reflecting upon it.
Yeah, I know what it feels like. At least I think I know what it feels like. Or I feel like I feel like.
Yes, I feel like I feel like I feel like I know what it perhaps feels like when I'm feeling that. But otherwise, you don't. You see,
it's all
we
rather automatic.
We ignore enteric sensitivity, enteric intelligence. And we go back to didactic exposition. Reflexively, habitually. And then when we comment upon things, as you just did, elegantly enough, the commenting stays with quite within the realm of the didactic presumption, the didactic accusation. Because we think, oh, I can say accurately what's happened to me before now, the way that I felt and the way that I've thought. But anything that you refer to in what we refer to as memory is merely a hallucinatory reference to what you thought was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we can appear to be really confident about insisting upon what it is that did happen to us, the way that it happened to us, why it happened to us, who's responsible, who's accountable, and who needs to pay for it. Or, you know, be given a peach cobbler because they did, you know, they really took care of us somehow. So, see, this ongoing hallucination convinces itself that it was present when whatever happened appeared to happen, and that its rendition of the story can be accurately reflected upon and then told over and over again as if it were the truth, as if it were reality. But no, it's not the case. But we won't dare touch the euphoric wisdom of refutation. That we won't do. Instead, no, I rely on pride, familiarity, and anyone that challenges, you know, my actual smug way of being turns out to be smug. Okay, you win. You're the human. You got this. Far out. I got to go get stoned. I got to get stoned and go for a walk because I, you know, can't handle the basic muggle malaise, if you don't mind. Don't take it personally. The bold and a little disconcerting wisdom of not knowing what this is can set the stage for a whole different quality of discovery. With no reliance on didactic accusation or didactic presumption. The miracle of sensing, which you could say is synonymous with
what it is, if it's a what at all, that you appear to. What does your mind appear to? What does the miracle of present sensuality or sensoriality appear to? It's not thinking that's registering the curious implication of thinking. It's not thinking that's registering the miraculous complexity of sensual experience. So here whatever that is that does whatever it does. Well, wow, here it is. Here's the best evidence of realization you're ever going to get or will ever need is exactly this. Holy shit, the fuck is this? If it's not personified, you see, if it's not made personal, if it's not blasphemed by, you know, one's personal PTSD history, it's like, holy shit. Oh. It sure isn't ordinary. It's not repetitive. It's not boring.
It does not require language to communicate at all.
And it does not require language to communicate at all. Yes. Yeah. So you're basking, one is basking the whole fucking species and maybe everything that's sentient and insentient forever and everywhere, ever, always, without Genesis, is basking in this intelligence. Because it is this intelligence.
Well, that's what, like, not that I know that there actually is a dog, but if there was actually a dog or some other beings about...
He would be eating my pizza.
You know, yeah, like, we go straight to the language, oh, like, they can't communicate and they don't do things like us, and,
right.
You know, but that's not, no, everything is equally, you know, they just don't talk. That doesn't mean anything, you know.
What would be the nature of sacred cooperation across races, culture, species, gender, sexual preference? Were enteric consciousness to usurp didactic bravado? That is the, just for fun, God-given puzzle and challenge for sentience to unravel. Which is another way of saying, if you're an adult in the contemporary world and you don't want to get enlightened, you're not paying attention. You're not. You think you're you. When that your career and your sports gear and your SUV and, you know, whatever you have or don't have. We're not just talking about, you know, socioeconomic advantages. So that's the poker game. It's God's poker game. Here, I'm going to deal you a hand. I'm going to imbue you with contagious, infinite, eternal affection and a neocortex. Good luck. That's the poker game. If you get it, then the 7-point-something billion that might, and of course we won't, subscribe to enteric intelligence would know how to thrive. If we don't, extinction is guaranteed. Guaranteed. Especially at the accelerated way this species is exploiting and burning and doing what it's doing to the point of its own, malignant destruction. You don't need to have some kind of so-called cathartic event. So now you can report on your realization, right, to people and try to exploit them in one way or another to give you money because of just how magical you fucking are. That, you know, that's bullshit. The whole model of guruism, whether in the East or in the West, is so 2017. The whole model of guruism.
Everything has been funneled through exploitation and consumerism.
Yeah,
so,
repeat.
I mean.
Yes. That's right. Come on a retreat at my house and wherever and then, you know, do my laundry and my weeding, my gardening. Yeah.
Can you get people to do gardening if you're enlightened?
let's find out.
And faking it for that, I mean.
Let's find out.
Get the poison ivy out front.
Yeah, you.
And then you'll be enlightened.
Hot mom, go take care of the poison ivy.
Bring me pizza.
And then pizza. Then we'll go from there. The model that we've become accustomed to and devotional toward is bullshit.
The bullshit model.
The guru model, the Zen model, the Tibetan model, all of these talking heads, it's bullshit. Suzanne sent me that link to this, you know, guy, and he starts talking about you need to be in control of your mind, in control of your emotions. And I'm like, God, shut the fuck up, click. I mean, it's the same, it's another sin-based exhortation. You're suffering and sinful and unhappy because you're not in control of your emotions or your mind or your experience. And that's what you need to cultivate, is being in control. You're like, dude, mitochondria is a wormhole of sentient seeding, quantum entangled, across the entire cosmos. Who's going to be in control of what here?
Yeah, we can't know. We can't accept them. We are important, super fucking intelligent, super intelligent apes. Super. We are super.
We're super.
Mitochondria? No.
No. Not mitochondria.
They're little.
So you see how we're so invested, ingrained in a certain way of looking and feeling and presuming and accusing that is all based on the sorry state of narration and discursive presumption. That's as far as we can go. We can only remain in defiance of what it is we have come to believe. And that's as far as your so-called enlightenment is going to take you. As in nowhere. But that's cool. There's nowhere to go anyway. So what the fuck difference does it make?
Yeah, you just keep ripping off random different shit.
Sean sends me a message here. He just sent God neutered us from higher logic. That's his message.
Right on time. Thank you, Sean.
He's a pistol.
Yeah, I mean, if someone got a hold of, like, let's say this video in, like, 20 years and then was like, oh, yeah, mitochondria, that's a great model. Giving that into a model would be just as bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's all it's...
Yeah.
I think Frank Zappa would have had a wonderful time with the mitochondrial model if he would only been open to it.
Yeah.
Got the vegetables, you know.
Called any mitochondria. Chances are good. Doodly doodly doodly. you know, when you read, if you read, if you track just a little bit through first-hand experience or through second-hand experience by appreciating the vocabulary of so-called, you know, realized, right, persons, you'll see very common threads in the discussion or description or the vocabulary that's used to suggest a shift from the burden of discursive orientation to the collapse of that, to the release. What, just for fun, we might be referring to as, you know, enteric mind. Non-specific proprioception. Not limited to the, you know, vibratory signatures of what we refer to as the body. Because the body is just a metaphor of that very intelligence deemed into being by virtue of the vocabulary that we assign.
You know, just out of habit, I think in terms of linearity and a progression, even as far as, let's say, settling back into or appreciating, we'll call it the tarot mind. But, you know, literality and linearity be damned, really. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, there's no, we're not talking about rules though, that we've
no.
accepted as a belief structure.
No. This is the unadorned presence of whatever you want to refer to it as. This is it. If we don't have a quarrel with it, if we don't pretend and presume to know what it is, how it came about, why I, whatever I is, suffer in the way that I do or have. If all of the hubris of one's imaginative and self-reflective capacities were to become, can we say, spontaneously naive, spontaneously incredulous, there was no remnant of you remaining. In present experience, there's no remnant of you remaining in present experience. And so then there's no orientation, grasping, derivation. You don't have to do anything about yourself. It's not like you've healed anything. You've just replaced didactic orientation, which is hallucinatory, with non-specific proprioception. Which is a different texture of communion. And that's how you get enlightened. You know, or you can crawl on your belly and do, you know, 100,000 prostrations, you know, from here to Bodh Gaya, if you want. You know, it's not going to work, but it doesn't mean it won't be fun. You could say it's the, you know, the privilege, if not the responsibility, of each so-called generation to recast and recraft the Dharma in a completely novel way without paying any homage to anyone, including, you know, founders like the Buddha. or whoever Brahman thinks he or she is. The nature of present intelligence is truly non-referential, though, you know, we keep talking. So there's no authority to turn to. Not Babaji, not Ramakrishna, certainly not Ramana Maharshi. Guy had a peacock thing going on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So without authority, without referring to either your religion or somebody else's religion, your cosmology or somebody else's cosmology, including LRH.
We will all leave them behind.
Tony Robbins. Jim Jones. Osho. Whomever. This is cosmology free. So there's no fruit of establishing some kind of referential or devotional loyalty to anything or anyone at all. Though that can be fun. I mean, you know, if you go out to the desert to Bhakti Fest, you know, put on orange clothes, jump up and down, sing Hare Krishna and get laid, I'm coming back next year. You know. But don't equate that with anything but that. Not that there's anything wrong with devotional chanting, but please, it's 2018, we're all going to die. Stop already. Or keep it up, you know, and I hope it spreads. I mean, I don't know where anything should go. More of or less of. You know, why not drink from the fountain that where you're not involved? Drink from the fountain of the absence of yourself, including the reflex to grasp or recreate, right, self or accoutrements of self. Really, to the extent one can, drink from the fountain of not self. Here it is. You don't have to fix nothing, resolve anything. You don't have to make amends. You don't have to get loaded.
Well.
Yeah, no, that one's a little rough.
Let's be realistic.
Let's be realistic. I'm done with the amends, but pass me a joint. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the two over the top.
I get too crazy.
Yeah. Hey, wait, let's not get too crazy. There's a place for Sam Harris and all this. Don't ask me what it is. Isn't it awesome not to make this about yourself? Mm-hmm. It's just so sweet. Oh, wow. One day I learned that this was never about me. I can't tell you how happy I was. Am. Not about me. Grab a pack of cigarettes and a Slim Jim, you know, a Diet Dr. Pepper, and go be of service somewhere. Our friend Dark Zen Light reminds us that THC stands for Tathagata, Highest Consciousness. That's a score right there. One's neuronal bias learns how, and I don't see any reason not to say learns how, to tweak, shift, or attenuate to enteric intelligence, non-specific proprioception. And you could say withdraw from the apparent stickiness of discursive or didactic orientation.
They're not really all around us, that didactic mind. It's not really. It's been an illusion that it's been all around me. It's all I seem to run into. And here there's enteric mind right there.
Yes. Yeah. You've been duped. So, you could say strong or common is the orientation to self-referencing through didactic mind, that the companion, you could say intelligence and sanctuary of non-specific proprioception was drowned out. And because the narrative is controlled by a culture that, let's say Judeo-Christian culture in the West, that is threatened by what the autonomy of realization, then you're kept from it. I mean, that, you know, all the drugs that could be windows into wisdom and healing and self-acceptance and ecstasy are Schedule One. Who did that? And how did we all say, oh yeah, that's dangerous. LSD's no good. Mushrooms are no good. Marijuana is no good. You know, MDMA is no good. PCP's no good.
Ruggy.
You know, you see, it's the same kind of racism that those people of color suffer in this, you know, great country of ours.
Yeah, it is totally a racism. And because it's like if you go home and drink a couple beers, that's fine. But, you know, which is way worse, poison, whatever. If you have a couple, like a joint, you're a druggie.
We don't mind if you get stupid on alcohol.
Yeah.
That's
really
cool.
Stupid.
You can get really stupid on alcohol,
really stupid.
But don't you dare talk to God with mushrooms, because we're going to lock you up for that shit. There seems to be an underlying fear by whoever thinks they're in control of, right?
This need
the narrative and the socioeconomic, right?
They cling to this control.
That's what the neocortex will do.
Yeah.
Whether it's Christian oriented or whatever, you know, Islamic, capitalistic, fascistic, it's all the same. It's all the same, really.
And control and higher and higher levels of thought and thinking and logic, as Sean illustrates, that's where it's at. Higher and higher and higher levels.
Well,
machine mind, you know, on high.
Yes. I mean, we don't know how quickly the singularity is coming or what it will portend, right? If when and as it matures is the right the marriage of AI and biologic.
Oh, it's already come.
It's here.
It just isn't. It's
they haven't let it out of the box
yet, or it is, but we don't.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. Maybe we'll never. We just won't know. I mean, I would. You know what I mean? Ever.
That's right.
It just will be running our ads in the background.
It
and
is now.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
Like smart enough to be like, don't tell those fuckers anything. Do not communicate with them
It may well be lizard people from another dimension.
I must go home and sleep.
Must go home and sleep. Think on these things.
Okay. Whatever you do not communicate with the humans.
Tomorrow
Panera. Yeah, if all works out. If it's nice out, maybe we'll have a fire. Nan said she was going to invite us to her house on Sunday for brunch and then a trip to the garden or something.
Oh no, a trip to the garden?
Yeah, we have to go on a field trip.
No.
Yeah.
Oh no.
But I don't know. I'm not sure if she's changed her mind or if I just didn't confirm with her early enough. I don't know.
All right, we'll see how it works.
No.
No, I feel.
I like crispy pizza.
Yeah, me too. Actually, I liked it a lot. Until you get, like, where the crust, like, hardens at the end.
Yeah.
It cools. You can't eat the crust. Like, you know. I tried. I was like,
no, you gotta gum it.
This is bad.
Well, you keep it in the car and just gum it a little bit at a time.
It was like chewing a rock. I was like, oh my God, ghosts are going to kill me if I try to eat that.
No, don't eat the crust. The night sky's time to... Don't eat the crust. Well, I think more people should be here is what I think, but I don't know.
Not looking so good.
I don't know why we're this message is so sparsely attended.
Oh my god. Yeah, I don't know.
Can't figure it out.
Definitely feels yeah, I don't, you know, in my wanderings through the day, not a lot going on in that department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's having more fun in San Rafael than they are in Doylestown.
Well, yeah, that could be true. Maybe we're just like the stupid fucking enlightened people. We're like the dumb birds that don't migrate, you know?
Yeah.
Why are those fuckers staying there?
Angry
I don't
birds.
Know. I know. There's only like four of them. Yeah, I know.
Four angry birds in Doylestown. They could just come to San Rafael,
do they
man.
Know
and, like,
it's cold.
Yeah. We're enlightened and it's warm. Come on.
Plus, you'll be with others that are just like you.
Any questions? I don't think so. Non-dual mutants. True.
I don't think the military is going to be looking for us.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't
think we're special forces or anything is going to be trying to.
You don't think we're a threat to Homeland Security?
No, nor do I think they're going to hire us to help.
Yeah, we need you guys to help. Okay, what do you want us to do? Move to San Rafael.
I can really power eat pizza.
Really? We'll work for pizza. All right, thanks everyone for joining us. Appreciate your company online and stuff. See you around.
My skills are like, I can get super.